account of the centuries-old battle between code makers and code breakers. Part two, The Beale Ciphers, tells the story of the still unbroken 150-year-old cipher deposited at a hotel in Lynchburg by a swarthy cowboy, which holds the secret of the whereabouts of a £10 million treasure.
By the 18th century, each European capital city had its own code-breaking industry. Teams of government code-breakers worked in so-called black chambers, nerve centres for deciphering messages and gathering intelligence. The most celebrated, disciplined and efficient was the Viennese black chamber. It operated according to a rigorous timetable because it was vital that its nefarious activities did not interrupt the smooth running of the postal service. Letters which were supposed to be delivered to embassies in Vienna were first routed via the Black Chamber, where secretaries melted seals and a team of stenographers made copies of the letters. Within 3 hours, the letters had been resealed in their envelopes and returned to the central post office, so that the letters could be delivered to their intended destination while codebreakers began to decipher the copies. While professional codemakers struggled to concoct a new secure cipher, something that would baffle the Black Chambers, the clandestine world of cryptography began to capture the interest of the public. During the 19th century, English etiquette forbade young lovers from openly expressing their affection, so much so that they could not even exchange letters. This resulted in lovers sending encrypted messages to each other via the personal columns of newspapers. These agony columns, as they became known, provoked the curiosity of amateur codebreakers, who would try to decipher the titillating contents of the messages. Another illustration of the public's familiarity with cryptography was the use of pinprick encryption. The ancient Greek historian Aeneas the Tactician suggested conveying a secret message by pricking tiny holes under particular letters in an apparently innocuous page of text. The punctured letters would spell out a secret message, easily read by the intended receiver. However, if anybody else stared at the page, they would probably be oblivious to the barely perceptible pinpricks, and would be unaware of the secret message. 19th century letter writers used exactly the same method, not to achieve secrecy, but to avoid paying excessive postage costs. Before the overhaul of the postage system in the mid-1800s, sending a letter cost about a shilling for every 100 miles, beyond the means of most people. But newspapers were allowed to travel free, and this provided a loophole for the thrifty Victorians. Instead of writing and sending letters, people began to use pinpricks to spell out a message on the front page of a newspaper. They could then send the newspaper through the post without having to pay a penny. As a result of this interest in codes and ciphers, novelists began to feature cryptography in their writing. In Jules Verne's Voyage to the Centre of the Earth, the decipherment of a parchment filled with runic characters provides the first step on the epic journey. In Britain, one of the finest writers of cryptographic fiction was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Not surprisingly, Sherlock Holmes was an expert in cryptography and, as he explained to Dr. Watson, was the author of a trifling monograph upon the subject in which I analyse 160 separate ciphers. The most famous of Holmes's decipherments is recounted in The Adventure of the Dancing Men, which involves a cipher consisting of stick men, each pose representing a distinct letter. On the other side of the Atlantic, Edgar Allan Poe wrote a short story about ciphers, which is widely acknowledged by professional cryptographers to be the finest piece of fictional literature on the subject. The Goldbug tells the story of William Legrand, who discovers an unusual beetle, the Goldbug, and collects it using a scrap of paper lying nearby. That evening, he sketches the Goldbug upon the same piece of paper, and then holds his drawing up to the light of the fire to check its accuracy. However, his sketch is obliterated by an invisible ink, which has been developed by the heat of the flames. Legrand examines the characters that have emerged and becomes convinced that he has in his hands the enciphered directions for finding Captain Kidd's treasure. The remainder of the story is a clear description of how one unravels such a cipher, culminating in the discovery of buried treasure. Although the Goldbug is pure fiction, there is a true 19th century story with many of the same elements. The case of the Beale ciphers involves Wild West escapades, a cowboy who amassed a vast fortune, a buried treasure worth $20 million, and a mysterious set of encrypted papers describing its whereabouts. The story begins in 1820 in the town of Lynchburg, Virginia. In January of that year, a stranger by the name of Thomas J. Beale rode into Lynchburg and checked into the Washington Hotel. According to Robert Morris, the hotel owner, the stranger was about 6 feet in height, with jet black eyes and hair of the same colour, worn longer than was the style at the time. He was extremely popular with everyone, particularly the ladies. Morris did not learn anything about Beale's background or the reason for his visit to Lynchburg, and at the end of March, Beale left as suddenly as he had arrived. However, 2 years later, in January 1822, Beale returned to the Washington Hotel. Once again, he spent the rest of the winter in Lynchburg and disappeared in the spring. But not before he entrusted Morris with a locked iron box, which he said contained papers of value and importance. Morris placed the box in a safe and thought nothing more about it and its contents until a few weeks later, when he received a letter from Beale. After a few pleasantries and a paragraph about an intended trip to the plains to hunt the buffalo and encounter the savage grizzlies, Beale explained the significance of the box. "It contains papers vitally affecting the fortunes of myself and many others engaged in business with me, and in the event of my death, its loss might be irreparable. You will, therefore, see the necessity of guarding it with vigilance." Morris dutifully guarded the box, waiting for Beale to collect it, but the man of mystery did not return to Lynchburg. He disappeared without trace, never to be seen again. Eventually, 23 years later, in 1845, Morris's curiosity got the better of him, and he cracked open the lock. Inside the box, he found a note written by Beale in plain English, and three enciphered messages. The note revealed the truth about Beale, the box, and the ciphers. In April 1817, almost 3 years prior to his first meeting with Morris, Beale and 29 others had embarked on a journey across America. After travelling through the rich hunting grounds of the Western Plains, they arrived in Santa Fe before heading north in search of buffalo. Then, according to Beale's note, they struck lucky. The party, encamped in a small ravine, were preparing their evening meal when one of the men discovered in a cleft of the rocks something that had the appearance of gold. Upon showing it to the others, it was pronounced to be gold, and much excitement was the natural consequence. The letter went on to explain that Beale and his men mined the site for the next 18 months, by which time they had accumulated a large quantity of gold, as well as some silver which was found nearby. In due course, they agreed that their newfound wealth should be moved to a secure place and decided to take it back home to Virginia, where they would hide it in a secret location. In 1820, Beale travelled to Lynchburg with the gold and silver, found a suitable location, and buried it. It was on this occasion that he first made the acquaintance of Morris. When Beale left at the end of the winter, he rejoined his men who had continued to work the mine during his absence. After another 18 months, Beale revisited Lynchburg with even more to add to his stash. This time, there was an additional reason for his trip. "My companions on the plane suggested that, in case of an accident to ourselves, the treasure so concealed would be lost to their relatives. I was, therefore, instructed to select some perfectly reliable person who should be confided in to carry out their wishes in regard to their respective shares." Beale believed that Morris was a man of integrity, which is why he trusted him with a box containing the three enciphered sheets, the so-called Beale ciphers. The first sheet described the treasure's location, the second outlined the contents of the treasure, and the third listed the relatives of the men who should receive a share of the treasure. Working on the assumption that Beale and his men were dead, Morris felt obliged to find the gold and share it among their relatives. However, in order to do this, he had to decipher the three cryptic sheets. This task occupied his mind for the next 20 years and ended in failure. In 1862, at the age of 84, Morris knew that he was coming to the end of his life and realized that he had to share the secret of the Beale ciphers. Otherwise, any hope of carrying out Beale's wishes would die with him. Morris confided in a friend, but unfortunately, the identity of this person remains a mystery. However, we do know that it was Morris's friend who made the first breakthrough by deciphering one of Beale's cryptic papers. The second Beale cipher, like the other two, contains dozens of numbers, and Morris's friend guessed that each number corresponded to a word in the Declaration of Independence. For example, the first number in the second Beale cipher is 115. The 115th word of the Declaration is instituted, which begins with the letter I. Hence, the first number, 115, represents the letter I. The second number in the cipher is 73. The 73rd word in the Declaration is hold, which begins with the letter H. By continuing this process, Morris's friend revealed the following message from Beale. I have deposited in the county of Bedford, in a vault 6 feet below the surface of the ground, the following articles: £2,921 of gold and £5,100 of silver. The successful decipherment indicated the value of the treasure, at least £10 million at today's bullion prices. Unfortunately, this approach did not provide the key to deciphering the other two Beale ciphers. In particular, the Beale cipher that described the location of the treasure remained a mystery. Not surprisingly, once Morris's friend knew the value of the treasure, he spent increasing amounts of time analysing the remaining Beale ciphers, but despite strenuous efforts, he failed to make any progress. In 1885, he decided to unburden himself by publishing everything he knew in a pamphlet, choosing to remain anonymous so as not to be pestered by eager treasure hunters. The pamphlet contained the successful decipherment, the unbroken ciphers, and the story as told by Morris to the pamphlet's author. During the last century, professional code breakers, computer experts, and hundreds of amateurs have tried to crack the two remaining ciphers, but as yet there has been no breakthrough. Some have argued that the Beale ciphers are nothing more than a clever hoax, but historical research supports many of the details in the pamphlet. There was a Thomas J. Beale and a Robert Morris, and Cheyenne legend dating from around 1820 tells of gold and silver being taken from the West and buried in eastern mountains. Consequently, the tale of the Beale ciphers continues to enthrall codebreakers and treasure hunters. However, anybody who might be tempted to take up the challenge of the Beale ciphers should take heed of some words of caution given by the author of the pamphlet. Before giving the papers to the public, I would give them a little advice, acquired by bitter experience. It is to devote only such time as can be spared from your legitimate business to the task, and if you can spare no time, let the matter alone. Never, as I have done, sacrifice your own and your family's interests to what may prove an illusion. But as I have already said, when your day's work is done and you are comfortably seated by your good fire, a short time devoted to the subject can injure no one and may bring its reward.